to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, and my co-host, Felicity Sidnell-Reed. Every week at this time, we visit with a local author. We get a glimpse into their lives. We find out what prompts them to write. We have an opportunity to hear them read their work and find out what their latest project is. And today, we're very pleased to welcome Mark Richardson. Welcome, Mark.
Well, thank you for having me here.
Mark is an automotive journalist who loves a good road trip. He was a former automotive editor for the Toronto Star and now writes for the Star and its website and Maclean's and the Microsoft website MSN Autos. 2008, he wrote Zen and Now, On the Trail of Robert Persick and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. Quite a mouthful, I must say. In 2012, he drove 7,800 kilometers of the Trans-Canada Highway and kept a daily account of his journey, both at Maclean's.ca and at CAA.ca. His new book, Canada's Road, A Journey on the Trans-Canada Highway from St. John's to Victoria. Why do you write about Canada's road?
Well, you know why, Gwen, because, I mean, as you mentioned, I love a good road trip, right? And there's no better road trip in Canada than the Trans-Canada Highway. I mean, it goes from totally one side to the other. It links the entire nation. And I wanted to go off on a good road trip. But then I also discovered that the Trans-Canada Highway was the exact same age as me. It's 50 years old. And I was actually, when I say exact, I mean exact. I was born on the day that the Trans-Canada Highway was opened.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah, July the 30th, 1962. And when I discovered that, and I mentioned it, people said, well, Mark, you were born to drive this road. So I did.
I remember the segment that went just around the village we were living in being open to. I was not born on that day, obviously, since I remember it.
But close to it, I'm sure. Right.
But when we say you write about Canada's road, I'm presuming you don't only write about the road, but the people you meet along the way or the cities you visit.
Well, that's right.
What's in this road trip?
Well, I made this into a long road trip. I took about 3 months to do this whole thing. And you say that I did drive 7,800 clicks across the country, but I went back and forth. I drove every kilometer of the road, but I kept going off it and back and forth. I did about 30,000 kilometers by the time I got back home again. And yeah, I wanted to meet the people who live on the road. I wanted to meet people who made the road 50 years ago. And I wanted to meet people who live on the road now. You know, old people, young people, people from all over the place. Because people is what makes a country, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And the Trans-Canada is what links our country. It used to be the railroad. That's no longer the case, I'm afraid. But the Trans-Canada's taken over from that. And as people have said, it's a physical link. Planes also link the country. I guess you can get on Air Canada and fly to Vancouver. But you can't see it, right? The Trans-Canada, you can touch it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have a favorite spot along the Trans-Canada?
Wherever I happen to be. I mean, people say, oh, what about those Rockies, eh? And what about this and that? I like the prairies. I like the wide openness of the prairies. It's wonderful. I can just relax on the prairies. And there's something about a road trip and a long drive. You've got the potential for extreme violence in any car drive, right? You could crash. Horrible things could happen. Yet you can also have a wonderful relaxation as you're just driving along, thinking your mind is elsewhere, wherever. And the combination of those two things are what makes it kind of cool for me.
And were you able to find a story every day?
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, I did a blog for Maclean's magazine. And so I had to look for something every single day. And because sometimes I'd only drive 100 kilometers to go find the next thing, I had an idea of things I wanted to look for. But I also was very open to, you know, finding stuff out on the way. So, in fact, what I did every single day, I looked for something that was old, something historic from whenever, for the Trans-Canada, something new, something current, and then just something wacky and different that I could find on the way. And you know what? I was worried, especially in Quebec, where there might have been a language issue, that sort of thing. It was never an issue. I found so much stuff to write about.
So what kind of wacky things did you find?
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, wacky people, wacky things, I don't know. It's just stuff that was interesting along the way. I'd never experienced before. I don't know. You have to read the book to find out.
Oh, give us a sample, just one.
Well, I can read you a wacky thing here.
Okay, we'll read us a wacky one.
Yeah.
Well, that one's not very wacky. That one's more interesting than wacky. Well, you know what I saw? I won't read you this bit because I'll let you read it in the book. But, I mean, just driving along the Trans-Canada, in Newfoundland, of all places, I go past these huge, big circular things, and they've got faces painted on them. And they're the size of, I don't know, they're 10 foot high or whatever it is. And they're all made up like cartoon characters just beside the road, right? And I thought, what is that? What are they doing there? What are these circular things? And then I realized that they were septic tanks. And they're
septic
on sale.
Tanks.
You can buy a septic tank. Now, how would you advertise a septic tank, right? How do you do that? And yet this Newfoundland company is... They put half a dozen septic tanks out beside the Trans-Canada Highway, painted them with like cartoon characters, made them into things like Angry Birds and the like. And hey, people stop, buy a septic tank. And you know what? I mean, I put the picture on the blog, and the person who owned the septic tank company phoned me up and said, hey, how can I get a copy of your book? This is great. Who would have expected that?
It'd be almost a pity to bury the septic tank with all the painting on it.
No, until you start using it, and then it's fine to bury it. That's fine.
Well, maybe you will read us a piece, though, from the book.
All right. Well, I'll read you one of my favorite bits.
Okay.
I'll read you an historic bit.
Okay.
But I'm going to read you a bit here from the Rogers Pass. And the point is, this is in British Columbia, and it's significant because I actually celebrated my birthday on July the 30th of the trip on the exact same day that the pass was opened and everything became open and everything else, right? So... I'm going to read you this little bit here from this exact same day. And this is because every day I wrote something old, something new, whatever, from each place that I got to, right? So this is actually from Revelstoke, B.C. I've just crossed the Rogers Pass, and I've just gone down to the bottom again. And this is day 49 of the trip. So for decades, the Rogers Pass was considered impractical for a highway, thanks to its mountainous terrain and its heavy snowfall. In the 1930s, when the government committed to building a road across the Rockies, it preferred the Big Bend route that followed the Columbia River north from Revelstoke in a 300-kilometer loop back down to Golden. The road was built at great cost, and mostly by pick and shovel, taking 11 years to construct through to the Depression. It opened in 1940, not quite complete, but it was never very good. It was dusty, narrow, corrugated gravel, and little scenery to speak of except dense stands of cedar and the occasional glimpse of the river. Most drivers avoided it, instead putting their cars on the train that ran through the pass. Journalist Bob Metcalf once described a drive in 1960 in which, and I'm quoting, he joined a motoring fraternity whose Big Bend stories improved with age. Their stories of broken springs, shock absorbers, axles and nerves, cracked windshields, lights, sumps and composure, lost tailpipes, mufflers, hubcaps and reason. Skeletons of cars, stripped of worthwhile parts and abandoned after major mishaps, lie forlornly at intervals by the roadside. Others that went over steep embankments lie where they came to rest, battered wrecks. And so, instead of continuing to maintain an untenable highway, the decision was made in 1956 to build the new Trans-Canada through the Rogers Pass. The initial budget was estimated at $22 million for the 143 kilometers of road, though after 7 years, two years longer than expected, the total cost came in about four times that, or $1 million a mile. As Daniel Francis describes in his excellent book, A Road for Canada, the challenges of the Rogers Pass were many. The site was isolated, weather was unpredictable, terrain was steep, crisscrossed by deep gorges and prone to landslides. Workers got used to blasting a stretch of right-of-way only to have it buried under a new pile of rubble cascading down from the slopes above. Does this sound familiar? Well, the road through the Rogers Pass was officially opened 50 years ago yesterday by B.C. Premier Wacky Bennett, W.A.C. Bennett. He and the Alberta Minister for Roads cut a ribbon across the highway about 13 kilometers east of Revelstoke and declared the road open. According to the Revelstoke Review that week, an actual count of those around the ceremony placed the number at close to 3,000. In addition, it was estimated that 30,000 people were in the 7 miles of cars, lined up two abreast on each side of the ribbon, waiting to get through. Most important, though, the newspaper account went on to add, tourists who lined the highway in the miles of procession breathed a sigh of relief when the Minister of Highways announced at the official opening that the highway would remain open. As I wrote recently, the Transcanter itself was scheduled to open 5 weeks later by Prime Minister Diefenbaker at a ceremony on the summit. Officially, Bennett held the provincial ceremony early because he would not be able to attend the national event. Unofficially, BC and Ottawa were arguing about money, like anything ever changes. How's that? That was a bit of history.
Yes.
So I got lots of history. I found all sorts of fascinating things in libraries. I mean, I quoted from newspapers there that I found long forgotten in libraries, that kind of stuff. And I had no idea there was so much history behind the Transcanter. We take it for granted, right?
Yeah.
And I say to people, oh, it's 50 years old. They can't believe that. They assume it's at least 100 years old. Yeah. No, it's not been that long that we've been able to drive across the country.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Mark.
You're very welcome.
Now we'll take a short break.